All right, let's go to Exodus 15. Let's pick up the reading in verse 20. Then Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took the timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her and with timbrels and dances. And Miriam answered them, "Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously, the horse and its rider. He is thrown into the sea." So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went out 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. When he cast it into the waters were made sweet. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them. And there he tested them and said, "If you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep off his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you I have brought into the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." So we'll just stop there. Notice the position they entered. Look at verse 22. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. So now they've experienced a great victory because of the mighty works of God. They're now coming out on the other side of the Red Sea, and now they're in the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and they found no water. All right, so we've got to keep this in mind here. This is going to be a big problem. Because this is not like, you know, a couple of buddies walking out and trying to find enough water for a couple of boys. I mean, you got a couple million people out there in the wilderness. So, I mean, it's a pretty dire situation. Now, remember, what did Egypt represent? As we go through this, Egypt represents bondage. And we need to remember this because the Israelites constantly forgot this. Over and over again, when they ran into trials and hardships, what did they constantly want to do? They wanted to go back to Egypt, didn't they? And this is the problem. We want to make sure that as we as Christians are not looking to go back to bondage. All right? We can forget. Particularly if times get difficult, we can forget the promises of God. We can forget what God saved us from. And we can forget what life was like living in the house of bondage. All right. So we want to make sure that how are some of the ways that we can prevent ourselves from forgetting? You stay in the Word. You continue to stay in the Word. You continue to apply God's promises or fill your mind with God's promises. You live in light of those promises. You also just keep in mind what He saved you from and what He is saving you to. And recognize the end. And understand that there is a race that's being run, as the writer of Hebrews says. All right? Now, here's a question for you. Egypt, if Egypt represents bondage, what does the wilderness represent? And what does Canaan represent according to the Scriptures? Well, the wilderness, I think, represents the Christian's life, right, in the world. So we have that period. But it represents the trials and the triumphs that we have in this life. And then what does Canaan represent?
Promised land.
Promised land, right? It represents our rest. Okay? Turn over to Hebrews 3. Hebrews 3. Look at verse 15. Well, notice what he says in verse 14. For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end. While it said, "Today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion." And then he says, "For who, having heard, rebelled? Indeed, was it not all who came out of Egypt led by Moses? Now with whom he was angry 40 years, was it not with those who sinned, whose corpse fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they shall not enter his rest, but to those who did not obey? And so we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief." Now look at chapter 4. "Therefore, since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it. For indeed the gospel was preached to us as well as to them." And that's interesting because a lot of people think, well, they didn't have the gospel. But they did. The gospel was preached to them as well as to us, but the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. For we who have believed do enter that rest, as he has said, "So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest," although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. And so it's very interesting here. If you look back, in other words, he's telling, you know, this, the writer of Hebrews is telling the Christians here that he's writing to, if you turn back, you will not make it to the promised rest. And God gives, and what is the example he uses to bring home that spiritual point? He uses the children of Israel in the wilderness who constantly were looking back. They were not believing in the promises of God. They were not resting in the promises of God. So they wouldn't experience the rest that God had in store for them. And remember, that first generation of Jews did not experience God's rest. They all died out in the wilderness. None of them got to go into the promised land. So they all died there. Why? Due to unbelief. And so sin, the sin of unbelief is a great sin. And this is why he talks about this throughout this entire section of Hebrews 3 and chapter 4 of the rebelliousness of unbelief and how unbelief causes you to sin against God and not rest in His promises and trust in His promises. Turn over to 1 Corinthians 10. Notice what he says there. Let's just pick up verse 1. "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, all ate the same spiritual food, all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat, to drink, and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer." Do y'all think the sin of complaint and whining and murmuring is a little bitty sin? We have an example of what God does to habitual complainers. "Now all these things happened," verse 11, "to them as an example, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore let him thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it." But the point here is that Paul uses even this event of all these Israelites who are scattered out in the wilderness. Why does Paul use it? Why does he say God gives us that story? As an example of what to do? No. An example of what not to do. So let us not be known as a people of unbelief. Let us not be known as a people of who are rebellious, who refuse to submit to God's word. Let us not be known as a people of complainers, murmurers, whiners. Because you know, when you look at all these different sins that are described there, some of them kind of hit close to home, don't they? When you don't get your way, does that draw you closer to God, or does that make your unbelief rise up? When you don't get your way, do you tend to praise God, or is your disposition to whine and complain and murmur against God? Because how you respond to that question says so much about your spiritual walk with respect to God. Can you trust Him? Well, let's step back and ask yourself this question. You're out there in the middle of nowhere in the wilderness with 2 million other people. Did God not know what He was doing? Could you trust God in that situation? What would you do? What would you have done? You go up there and you get this report from 12 spies, and 10 of them come back and say, "It's impossible. We can't conquer." How are you going to respond? Do you allow your peers to squash your faith by speaking words of disbelief into your life? Be very careful about who you let speak into your life. Okay? And so, understand these were given for our example. They are given to us as warnings to remind us of how we should not behave. And so, think about the different sins that are being described here and think about it for a moment, because they'll hit very close to home if you think about it for just a second and say, okay, did you not get your way in a certain area this past week? Were any of your plans frustrated? How did you respond? Did you look more like that first generation of Israelites who didn't get to enjoy the rest? Or were you able to follow and heed the warnings that Paul gives you here and say, okay, if God doesn't want me to have my plans accomplished today, can I be content with that? Because it's for your own good anyway. All right, let's move on. Go back to Exodus 15. Let's talk about the problem they encountered. And so you have to start asking yourself these questions. Is there situations in your life that come up and pop up in your life where God allows that as justification to sin against Him? What if you're tired? Is that a justification to sin? What if you're hungry? What if you're thirsty? I'm talking about you've been 3 days without water now. Does God use that as a basis to justify sin? Well, let's look at the story and let's find out. Look at verse 22. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. Now when they notice what happens here, they encounter this problem. They're only 3 days out. They're out there for 3 days. They think, you got to think of the magnitude of the problem here. I mean, you need a water system the size of, you know, Greenville's to supply enough water for that many people, right? I mean, that's a lot of water that those people need. Okay? So you got about 2 million people that need water. And that's important for us to remember. And keep in mind, they experience these problems even though they're following God. It's God who is guiding and leading them out there to this, isn't it? All right? So we should not be surprised when we follow God that problems may come our way or that we may encounter problems. In fact, we ought to prepare ourselves for battle when we follow Him. So what was the problem? There's no water, and when they finally find some, that water is bitter. All right? Now, I don't know about you, but when you've been just parched and you want water, have any of you like been on the beach all day and you just famished and some of that salt water gets in your mouth? I mean, that's like the worst thing ever. And I mean, that's basically what you're doing here and what you're seeing here, all right? So notice what they do in verse 24. And the people rejoiced and praised God for what He had done. Is that what it says? It's not what it says, is it? And the people complained against Moses. So now we're going to go after the authority. We're going to go after the authority figure here. We're going to complain against Moses. What shall we drink? All right? So what is their response to their situation? What are they doing? They're complaining, they're murmuring. Now, who are they murmuring and complaining against? Ultimately God, because they're going after His ordained authority, right? But think about how fickle these people are. I mean, they're crying out to God to redeem them now that they're liberated, and the first road bump that they hit, they're complaining. Alright? So I want you to think about that for a moment. You say, well, that's not a road bump. I mean, they need water, don't they? Well, sure they need water. But does that justify them complaining the way they did? Think about the severity of the situation, but still what they're doing is sinful. Now, why do they do it? Well, that's our nature. That's human nature. The fallen nature of man is to complain when we don't get our way. But ultimately, it's because of unbelief. All complaining, all murmuring is a result of unbelief. Because either we don't think God is in control, or we don't like the way He's running His universe. Alright, so let me state that again. Why is murmuring and complaining so wicked? It's because either we don't think God is in control, or we don't like the way He's running His universe. So do you see how sinful this is? Do you see how sinful it is for you to take your little peanut and say, I know better than God how to govern in this situation? It's pretty insulting, isn't it? One of the things this teaches me is that we need to learn to master our tongue and receive all that God throws our way and understand that He has a purpose. And that purpose is to grow us, to mature us, to trust Him even more. And so when everything is going our way, sometimes, you know, when life gets too easy, we can tend to forget God. But when things go our way, it may be easier to just trust Him and say, well, you know, this is good. God's taking care of me, and I'm going to trust Him. I'm going to be thankful. But when there's something like this kind of situation, there's a trial in your life, you need to learn to govern your tongue to make sure that you're seeking Him out in a way that still reverences God. Okay? All right. Look at verse 25. So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. When he cast it into the waters were made sweet, and there he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. All right, so now we see God's testing them, right? But the idea here is Moses shows us what we should do when we come into a situation, a trial. We shouldn't be murmuring and complaining, but we should follow in the footsteps of Moses and seek out God's wisdom through prayer. Now, Moses does the right thing by crying out to God. And so God shows Moses a tree, and He shows a tree to take those defiled waters and make them clean and pure to drink. Now, notice the provision, right? In the emergency. In verse 25, you know, the second part of it says, there he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. Alright? And so remember, God did all this for what reason? Did God just send them out there and say, oh, I forgot, there's no water out there? That's not why He said He sent them out there. Why did He send them out there? Huh? I hear talking, but I don't see it. Oh, to test them, right? Your text says He tested them. And so as He's testing them, He's testing their faith, and He's also helping them to grow. So what was the provision? The provision was a tree. And what did it do? It made the water sweet. And so we see that as Moses obeys God, let's see the consequence of this in verse 26. And he said, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in His sight, give ear to His commandments and keep all of His statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. Okay, and so notice their responsibility. What is their responsibility here? What is he telling them to do in this verse? Follow His law. Right? Isn't that what he says? If you heed the voice of the Lord your God, do what is right in the sight, give ear to His commandments, and keep. Notice, don't just hear them, but you got to keep them. And what is the benefits of this? What were some of the benefits of obeying God in this particular situation? I'm going to withhold something. I'm going to withhold the diseases on you that I brought to the Egyptians. Alright? And so, notice that it is there, the purpose of all this was to refine them. Their responsibility is to follow God's law. Notice their remaining sin. If they continued in sin and they continued in unbelief, God says, I'll pour out a curse on you. I'll start bringing some of the diseases that you guys had back in Egypt. I'll bring those back. Alright? Also, verse 26, we see to reveal Himself. God is revealing to these Jews that I am with you. Don't ever doubt that. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. And we need to remember this as well. Ask yourself, why God gave us this example? Why did He put this example? You think out of 40 years, this is the only, you know, think about the hardships that we actually read about. Why does He put this one here? Well, Paul told us. He gave it to warn us, to remind us of what God expects of us. And so it's given to us an example that when we follow God, we will experience trials. Difficulties will come our way from time to time. He will test us. And so these tests are designed to strengthen our faith and draw us closer to Him. And so you have to ask yourself, have you been tested in a while? Has God tested you lately? What did He teach you during those tests? Did you learn anything from them? Or did you whine and complain all the way through them? You see, sometimes we have to be taught over and over again, don't we? We need to make sure we understand what's the appropriate response to the test that God gives us. And He tells us here to obey Him, to follow after His statutes, to keep His principles. All right? We need to refuse to use our tongue in a way that brings any dishonor to His name. So murmuring and complaining does that. And we want to make sure we're not guilty of that. Okay? All right. So what are some of the things, some lessons we can learn, that we can use this lesson to discover whether we're Christians? We also need to remind ourselves how we respond in these situations. We're not to go on feelings or external, what makes me feel good at the moment. We need to be careful with that. And let me just say this. Don't underestimate the weakness of the body to cause you to sin. Sleep, requiring sleep, food, hunger, thirst, all these things are things that the body requires. The body requires rest. The body requires food. The body requires water. You know, we were talking about this just yesterday. But where in the Bible does the Bible ever justify rest, hunger, thirst? Does it ever justify sinning? It doesn't. I mean, I want you to think about the example Christ gives you when He's there with Satan. And, Satan tempts Him to turn these rocks into bread, right? After you've been fasting for 40 days. Or think about His disciples, why He's there praying in Luke 17, or I think it was Luke 17 or 18, where He's praying and He's there and He's about to be betrayed. And He comes back and He finds His disciples sleeping when they should be doing what? Pray. Did He say, you know what? Man, y'all are tired. It's been a long day. Don't worry about it. No, He says, get up and pray. And why does he tell them to get up and pray? So that you won't be tempted and you won't fail the temptation. You see, there are times where we need to understand that we're at war and we don't need to have this peacetime mentality that says everything's okay, so I don't need to be praying right now. There are times when we come under spiritual attack, you need to be praying. So the point I want to make to you is that we need to learn, and we can learn from Christ, we can learn from Moses, we can learn from these examples that have been given to us, to not allow our external circumstances to cause us to sin. Okay? And so this is part of what we were talking about earlier today, living with the past in mind. And what I mean by that is, look at the great cloud of examples and testimonies of these faithful men and women that God used to remind us of how we should live in the present. Okay? Also, let this be a reminder to us that we should not allow the sin of unbelief to forfeit our eternal rest. Okay? If we're Christians, we need to learn to control our tongues. We need to refrain from murmuring. We need to refrain from complaining. We also need to think about, look at the example that went before us. Look at the Lord Jesus Christ, what He endured on our behalf. And it says, for the joy that was set before Him. I want you to think about that for a moment. And we're to imitate Him. Okay? So, if you're not a Christian, you should commit yourself to Christ. Otherwise, you're going to experience the bitter waters not only in this life, but the life to come. Can you envision a place where your thirst is never quenched? Christ says that there is a place for those who reject Him. And so the call for anyone that doesn't know Christ is to come and drink freely of the living waters. Okay?